You're listening to The Joel Comm Show. Welcome to those of you that are joining us today. I'm really excited about my guest. He's a buddy of mine. He's had a fascinating history. He's a lot of fun. He's got wine. And so it might even be even more fun. And frankly, I'd have some wine with me right now, too, if I didn't know that it would put me to sleep this afternoon. And I'm not ready for a nap. But his name is Andy Grignan. And let me give you a little background on Andy. The dude is a super smart when it comes to technology. He's not smart about anything else. But when it comes to technology, he's super smart. He not only does software, but he does hardware. And what he's really known for is besides being devastatingly handsome, is being on the Apple team. In fact, he is responsible for some of the software that you might use every day or have used in the past. Remember iChat? Yeah. He did that. How about Dashboard for Mac OS? That if you're on Mac OS, you use that all the time. Yeah, he did that. And how about this? There were 10 people on the Apple team that worked with Steve Jobs on the creation of the original iPhone. We're talking 2007 is when it came out. He was one of those 10. So join me in welcoming Mr. Andy Grignan.
Sorry.
Hey, you want to see something cool? I spoke at an event in Napa just last week, and if I had been there for more than a day, I would have called you before I left San Fran. But you know how they hand out swag at these shows when they've got booths. Check out this swag.
What is that?
It is from Soshi. Grow your social media with us. Wine not. It's a squishy wine bottle.
Oh, that's cool.
Anyway, hey, good to see you, man.
Good to see you too, man. It's been a little while.
I know.
We normally hang out at things like CES and or parties and things like that. But
nerd
I guess this will do. Huh?
Yeah, well, you are in the bubble. You live in the Silicon Valley bubble.
That is a true bubble. Absolutely. We were talking about that.
It's a whole other world.
It is. It's a very different, we get used to, you know, it's funny. Whenever I travel, one of the things I like to do is just kind of listen to people talking, you know, in the background and just overhear like whatever's being said. When you're in Silicon Valley, you're going to hear nothing but startup pitches. Like, oh, I've got this idea, you know, I'll get some crypto thing or financial thing, whatever. And then you go to New York or wherever, and it's something about fashion or money or whatever it is. But San Francisco unanimously is just, you hear about somebody's, you know, it's like, you know, Pinterest, but for cats. And you just shake your heads. And you're like, oh my God.
Pinterest.
What have we done? What have we done?
I want Pinterest for bacon. Only bacon. Oh. Baconerist. Or it would have to be Baconer without the last E, right?
I don't mean to derail your thing, but are you an actual bacon fan?
Oh, yeah.
Really, for real? I don't know.
What's not to like about bacon?
It's, I don't know. I feel like I'm a fraud in that respect. I say I like bacon, but I don't know that I like
bacon. Right now where this interview is over. Send that man some bacon. No, it's
awesome. Well, thank you for the kind words, man. That was really nice.
But wait, we got to go back to this. Is bacon not a thing?
Not to me. A friend of mine has his own company. He has a pound of bacon delivered every day. And I went to go see it, and I was just, like, picking at it. I've got this thing with fat. Like, if it's too fatty, I don't like it. Odd considering all of this. But
I was going to say that could just be self-loathing. I don't know. I should talk. You should see the paunch sitting here. I'm like, carrying my own slab of bacon. Okay, fair enough. Let's get into some meat here. Where did you go to school? Where did you graduate from?
Oh, you know, I never graduated. I went to school at the University of Iowa, and okay. Went there because I grew up in Chicago, right? And I had thought about going to a technology like University of Illinois, which is a great, you know, computer science.
We've had this conversation offline, right?
Yeah, we have, right?
Yeah,
and I went to Iowa because I wanted to be a doctor, right? That was supposed to be somebody's gynecologist or something. I don't know. But I failed out of like the weed out, like organic chemistry. That's what it was. I failed that class. And I realized my medical career was over. What?
Aren't you glad?
I am glad. So I went into
college. Ended up a proctologist. No offense to the excellent butt doctors that are out there.
Correct them. Damn near kidding. Yeah. Well, no, I went to school at University of Iowa. And so when I switched into comp sci, I was like a junior. And I had this opportunity to do some work with Apple. My good friend was, don't be faking bacon, right? My good friend had just gotten a contract gig working on the Newton team. And so he lined up this deal for me to go, and I ended up working with the QuickTime team. Remember, QuickTime was people still use it. You don't know you're using it, but it's under the covers. And so I got this internship with QuickTime. So it was a summer internship, right? It was working on this new product they had called QuickTime Conferencing, very early days.
About what year are we talking here?
This was 94.
So the lab was just a new thing.
It was a brand new thing. CUC Me was the state of the art in video conferencing. It was like little, we called them dynamic icons.
Yeah,
is what it was. They were tiny little things. And so QuickTime was making a video conferencing product. And so I got an internship with them. I spent the summer there. I had the best time of my life, right? This was, interns got their own offices at Apple back in the day. And I had my summer. At the end of the summer, they said, hey, do you want to continue your internship from Iowa? I was like, hell yeah, I do. And so they shipped me back to school with like $10,000 worth of Macs. They paid for some, how was the internet I had? It was like ISDN. Remember that? Like super, like super old school, like internet. They paid for all that. And, you know, when you're actually at school and you're writing your 10th calculator for comp sci, you know, who gives a crap? If you have your chance to write another calculator, or work on cutting edge video conferencing. Guess what I did? I chose video conferencing. So my grades were terrible. And then at the end of that semester, that fall semester, they were like, hey, just throwing it out there. Would you be interested in joining full time? And I'm like, sign me up. So I had a very difficult conversation with my parents where I told them, look, you know, I'm done with school. I'm going to go work at Apple. And like, you're an idiot. What's wrong with you? You need a degree to be successful because of this, that. And I said, oh, I want to go. So I got out to Apple. They made me an offer. I was making $52,000 a year. This is in 95.
Yep, that was solid.
It was not bad. And, you know, I was laying on – I remember. So I had a two of my friends from Iowa as well. We all had a little nerd house together in Sunnyvale. And I had one of the rooms. My rent was like $200 a month or $250, something like that. I was sleeping on an air mattress. At the Sunnyvale nerd house, right? It was one of the, you know, since I'm not exactly the thinnest guy, I'd wake up to this deflated. I was basically laying on the ground every morning because the air mattress would deflate. But I got my first paycheck. I cashed it at the credit union inside of Apple, and I got it all in hundreds. And I went over to Fry's and I bought a big screen TV and a table to put our computers on.
I'm done. I'm out. I'm good.
Yeah. Anyway, that's all. Sorry. So I didn't graduate. But then I just started working at Apple. And, you know, funny enough, Apple, I think, was and maybe not still is. Apple was a place where misfits like me could go without a degree and write software, do a bunch of really cool stuff. And they didn't, you weren't prejudiced by whether you had a degree or not. Now we obviously today, you know, fast forward to 2000, whatever, 17. And we don't really look at that stuff anymore. We look at your degree or your school, more importantly, as the pedigree towards what's your opportunity. I look at it as an investor. Okay. You went to Stanford. Okay. You know, you probably have a pretty good chance of success, but I don't look for the degree anymore.
Yeah, you know, I went to U of I in Illinois, and I got my piece of paper in speech communications, which was never something I thought I would use and didn't intend to. And I don't even remember because it was all one big blur of being stoned. True story. I don't smoke anymore, kids, but I did when I was a kid. And now I just enjoy a glass of wine here and there. And I've never used my degree. And I've always been entrepreneurial and done my own thing. So you don't have to have a degree to be successful. The world has changed. So when did you meet Steve Jobs?
The very first time was when I went back to Apple. So I was at Apple for 5 years, right? And my friend, who became my co-founder eventually, the guy from Iowa who worked at Newton, he got a job over at Home. And At Home was building a lot of, it was building cable modem technology, right? This was before cable modem as internet really took off, right? We still had DSL, but, and so I went over there. I joined At Home to build a new kind of set-top box for those guys. And we merged with Excite, and so it became Excite at Home, which was the poster child for the dot-com bubble collapse. Remember in 2000 when everything just went to shit, Excite at Home led the way. When I joined, the stock was like $18 a share. I rode it all the way up to 200 and change, didn't sell a single share. And then I rode it all the way back down to basically worthless. And so that was, at the end of that, I went over to this other company called Pixo, P-I-X-O. And Pixo was writing a new kind of operating system for mobile devices. Remember pagers, like those little two-way pagers and things? And so we were building the operating system for that. And one of our friends at Apple came to us, this guy named Tony Fadell, came to us and said, hey, can you make your shit work with this? And he showed us, you know, those video, those jog wheels, the circular kind of video editing wheels.
Yeah.
He's like, can you make your shit work with this? I'm like, oh, yeah, we think it can. So we built a version of the platform for that worked with circular input. He's like, hey, okay, great. Can you give us a sample application with your platform? And like maybe one that plays MP3, you know, music. We're like, all right, great. So we made a little app. It was called, if you're a programmer, you know, in the source code, it's called TMP3 sample app is what we called it. The class name for this thing, and it booted up and played music, and then great. So he bought a license to the platform. I think it was $50,000, flat fee. But whatever. Next thing I know, Steve Jobs is on stage holding up the iPod, and like,
what year are we at now?
This was 2001.
Okay.
And or 2001, somewhere around there. And I was like, holy crap, we've been working on the iPod this whole time. That's actually a really cool thing. Maybe because now Pixo was starting to kind of tube it a bit. It's like, all right, maybe it's time to go back. And so I got a job back at Apple in 2001, and it was with what would become iChat. So there was about four of us, I think, on the team at the time, and they were writing this new communication app. And really, I was hired because of my video conferencing background from the first time I was at Apple. Didn't know that yet, but that became apparent later.
So was your meeting him just a casual hey, or was there something memorable about it?
No, it wasn't. So when we were developing iChat, I worked for this guy, Scott Forstall, who ultimately became like the big guy for iPhone, along with Tony. But Forstall had a weekly meeting with Steve. It was just a UI review because Scott was responsible for a lot of the apps for macOS. And we were doing a demo of early iChat. And so Scott would parade a few of us around, you know, into those meetings and show off the thing, whatever it is you were working on. And he just asked me to do a demo to Steve one day for iChat. I was like, yeah, great, whatever. So it was just a very matter of fact. It wasn't at all like this, holy crap. Because he wasn't, you know, he was Steve Jobs, but he wasn't like Steve Jobs, right? He was still just, you know, our CEO. And I guess I was probably more nervous about meeting him as CEO than I was about him being Steve Jobs. Mm-hmm. Even though we had plenty of
your boss.
He was my boss's boss. Yeah. His boss. But what?
So you did the iChat thing.
Yeah.
And then they put you on an application that still endures as part of OS to this day.
So Dashboard. Yeah, so we did iChat, and then we did iChat AV, where I worked with Fadell again on the camera. His team built the iSight camera. Remember that little tube camera that went right on top of your laptop? Mm-hmm. And that actually was a very important thing because that's what sowed the seeds for the next thing eventually. But it was my exposure back into hardware again, which I really liked. But then, yeah, I went over to work on this thing called Dashboard. Dashboard are these little widgets, you know, people don't know, that back in the day, web pages were big square things that, you know, fit in a browser, right? That's all a web page was. Mm-hmm. Our idea was to make them not square, like add a little bit of alpha transparency so you could have nice little rounded things, make them cute, they could animate, they were in JavaScript. And that was a fun app, a fun, you know, fun feature of macOS. But all that that meant was more of a Steve demo cycle. So that got to be more of a pattern of now seeing Steve very regularly. Mm-hmm. And I'll come back to that other, because iChat AV was where I got the nickname, which I know you wanted me to talk
and about. And we're going to get into that in just a moment. I just, yeah. My guest is Andy Grignan here, and I just want to let you guys know we are on the BeLive.tv platform. And if you want, if you're wondering, if you're watching going, how do I do these two-person interviews on Facebook Live? What magic, what alchemy are you using to do this? It's BeLive.tv. Go there and you can for free do broadcasts that push directly to Facebook Live or these two-person broadcasts. If you have a page on Facebook, you could even schedule it that you could do that. What do you think of this the software?
I think it's awesome. I'd like to see your side of things. You were explaining to me how you get a special little presenters panel, which allows you to choose the things that show up. And I'd like to see that part. But
I do. There's no way to show it. I can't screen share here. But what you can do, Andy, is when we're done, you can go to BeLive TV and go set up a thing, and then you could see it for yourself. And it's kind of cool because I can put just me on screen. I could put just you on screen. I could do picture in picture or side by side or either way. And I could type in stuff and I can put in comments from people just by clicking to show that comment. So I encourage you guys, if you're not using BeLive, then take the opportunity to do that. And as long as I'm talking live, I also want to make sure that you know, because live is the big thing. And the show is called Joel.live. That's actually a website. You can actually go to Joel.live. Why .live? Because I think it's important, if you're going to do live video, to carve out your space in the live video world. In fact, if you want to register your own .live domain name, I have spoken with the good people at .live, and they're going to give you 20% off your own regular .live domain name. Go to joel20.live. Then type, look for your name. See if you can grab that sucker before somebody else does, because live video is blowing up like that, and you want to get your name. So go to joel20.live, and you can do that for yourself, for your future. Do it for the children. Speaking of children, my guest today, Andy Grignan, we're about to jump into some really – how's that for a segue? What's that? Right there. I just said the crap out of that right there. So working with Steve Jobs at Apple – he gave you a nickname. Now, this is pre-iPhone. Just
this
work.
This was iChat AV days, right? So,
okay, tell the story.
So we were doing again, part of the regular Steve, you know, demo routine. Every Tuesday, we go to this one little weird room, and we would show off our stuff. So it became a regular weekly thing. And normally, Steve's admin would call the room when he was on his way. Right. Funny. Another fun fact, Steve never had his own badge. He had one, but he never carried a badge. To get all around an Apple, you need to badge in on doors. And Steve had people that would be there. They knew his schedule, and they would open the doors for him. So he never had to actually badge
in. He's like, badges. I don't need those stinking badges.
So he, his admin would call and say, all right, Steve's, you know, he's in a good mood today, or sometimes be in a bad mood or whatever, but she would give us a heads up. Anyway, she's like, he's in a kind of a funny mood today. So he kind of comes into our room. We're all waiting for him.
I want to give a warning. I want to give a warning right here. This is not safe for work, Kang. If the kids are gathered around and you don't want them to hear something that might offend their ears, this would be the time to have them leave the room. Or if you're in the office space and you don't want other people to hear, this would be the time to turn down the volume. Other than that, carry on.
So he comes in, he plops down on this chair, and he just had like this look of disbelief on his face. He's just sitting there laughing. And he goes, I got some email today. And so Steve read every single email that was ever sent to him at Steve at Apple or SJ at Apple. He read all. And he would never act on it. He sometimes forward them off, but he read every single one. And somebody's really pissed about whatever it was. And they called me a fuck chop. We're all like, what the fuck's a fuck job? Like, we're laughing about it. It's like, well, it's kind of a funny thing. And he's laughing about it. But he's like, the guy's really pissed. And, but whatever it was. We're like, all right, great. So time for the demo, right? So I'm showing off the early days of iChat AV. We had the camera, we had, you know, the software was just hobbling along. And one of the guys I was partnered up with was in another office. Cause, you know, obviously to do a video conferencing demo, you need to be in separate places. It doesn't work. And so they were going to, you know, we got all the software up and running in the demo room. I run off to the other office and we do a video call, and it's great for like the first 5-10 seconds, whatever it was. And eventually my audio crapped out. So they couldn't hear what we were saying. Right. So I could see and hear them. They could see me, but not hear me.
That's how demos go, right? Guaranteed.
Yeah, right. Happens all the time. And so we're kind of working through it, but we had seen this issue before and we're trying to debug it in real time, right? Because it wasn't easily reproducible. We had like a unique opportunity. Of course, it's with Steve there. And so my guy is like typing away, trying to figure out what's going on. And I can see, and I'm watching the screen because I'm trying to figure out what's going on too. And I can see kind of off the corner that Steve's getting, you know, irritated. But and Steve had a fuse like that. And so when it blew, it fucking blew. And so I can see him getting irritated because, you know, we're wasting time. And the thing you didn't do, and I knew this, it was a rookie move. Don't waste his time. And so we're kind of going through it. And it can see him getting angst, you know, very just angry. And he slams his hand down. He goes, "This demo is over." And he's just start exploding about, "Don't waste my fucking time." I forget exactly the words he said, but then he was like, "You know what? And he wasn't being funny. There was no like smirk on his face. There's nothing like that. And he's looking right at me in the camera. He's like, "You know, I think I finally figured out what a fuck chop is. It's you, and stop wasting my goddamn time." And all I see is like this angry, like face kind of up near the camera where he grabs the mouse and he's going for the close box on the screen. And that's the last bit. And I'm just sitting there like, holy shit. And the few people in the room like started, because when things go bad, everyone talks, you know, gossips. And so people start talking. So then I get this nickname. I became Fuck Chop. So everyone started calling it to me. But every time they would say it, I was like, oh man, like, because it you just had that pit in your stomach and you're like, oh, this sucks. What a right. Awful feeling. And that went on for like a month where I was just really not happy about it. And then further on, so I just became Fuck Chop informally, right? So fast forward to when I joined Fidel's, or I go join iPod from the iSight camera days, right? So I joined Fidel's org. And at the time I was working for John Rubenstein, who ran all of hardware. And I decided to just own it. Ruby knew my nickname. Tony, everybody knew the nickname. And I was like, you know, all right, this has been a year. This is a whatever year or so later after Dashboard. So I decided to put it on a business card. Right? And so Apple has a web page where you can type in whatever you want on a web page, and your address, your manager, whatever, and you can put your title in. And so I put in Fuck Chop. So I put F*KCHOP. So I submit it. And 2 weeks go by. It's a Friday. 2 weeks go by. And I go to, I said, yeah, I haven't seen my cards or whatever. So I go down to Rubenstein's office and I kind of knock on the door. And I'm like, hey, John, random question. Did you see my request for my business cards come through? And Ruby like stops typing. He has these like glasses, like, you know, old guy glasses, puts them on the bridge of his nose. He's like, I've been meaning to talk to you about that. What the hell is wrong with you? You can't put that on Apple stationery. Like, no. I was like, all right, fine, whatever. Like, so we go out to lunch with my friends. We're laughing, thinking up new titles. And I get back. It's like, whatever, 2 or 3 in the afternoon. And I get this email from Apple Printing saying, your business cards have been approved. I was like, what the hell? All right, maybe you had a change of heart. I don't know. Keep my mouth shut. Cards show up in mail like 3 days later, Apple Mail. Apple's got their own mail system. And I get it. I'm like, holy crap, for real. And so, I mean, they're funny, right? So I took one out. I go downstairs to go see Ruby again. And I wanted to give it to him because obviously he had a change of heart, right? So I go to give him this card. And he's like, don't you dare show this to another person. This is contraband. I'm like, all right, what's going on? He's like, so what happened was he got the same email that I did. Your business cards weren't approved. But he's an EVP at a big company, so he's got other shit to do, whereas I don't. And he had to actually go on with his day. So he tried to get them canceled on Monday over the weekend because nobody works on the weekend, right? So he tries to get them canceled. And they're like, no, it's too late. It's probably already done. In fact, it's on the way. So what happened was when I went to his office was almost 2 weeks to the hour. And what happens is after 2 weeks, if your manager didn't explicitly approve or reject the request, they got auto approved.
So it's a broken people at the print shop going, look at this one. This is great. Now, you know what? You have the cards in the original. That's the original box they came in. The original
box that they came in. I don't know if you can see that.
And you still have some left, right?
I have a few left. Yeah.
This is, let's hold it up. Let me put you on full screen so people can see. Hold it really close.
Let's see. Is this?
Go up? There you go. There you go. Can you guys see that? Andy Grigman, F asterisk asterisk K chop. That was.
That was it. That was Chop Chop. Yeah. Random story, but whatever.
That is awesome. So I want to seg into talking about the iPhone, but first I want to address a question. We'll just deal with this right here. Sandra asks, was Steve Jobs really crazy? I need to know.
Was he crazy? Depends on how you define crazy. If by crazy you mean unpredictable, yes. If by crazy you mean like just delusional and nuts, no. He was very calculating. He knew exactly what he was doing. He was prone to flying off the handle all the time, just like anybody was. But he took it to kind of to an extreme. And what's funny is he would blow up over just random inane things, right? He doesn't. What's wrong with you? Why didn't you guys think this through? You know, this should do this, that, and the other thing. And he would just start screaming about stuff like that for absolutely no reason. What I eventually learned on iPhone. Was I saw a side of Steve where he knew when to be not crazy Steve, and to use the other word, right? So there were a few times where the iPhone project was stopped dead in its tracks, well beyond anything like, oh, this button doesn't close the window when it's shut or whatever stupid thing. No, we were actually having a real problem. And instead of him going like unhinged, he actually became very pensive. He had these little rocker chairs. He would just sit there. And he would rock in his chair. And those were the times to really be scared. Those were the times where the company was at risk, where this project was at risk, not because he was just being a crazy person. He knew exactly what he was doing quite often.
Okay, so you did the whole iChat thing, you did the dashboard, and then when did they come to you and say, okay, we're putting together a team to create a new device? That would become the iPhone. When did that start?
So the conversations had been happening for a long time. So remember when Apple introduced the iTunes software that worked with the Rocker? Motorola had a phone called the Rocker. Mm-hmm. Remember they had those four-letter codes, ROKR or whatever it was.
Yeah.
And ever since that we did the deal with Motorola, there was this idea that Apple should produce a phone. The iTunes deal was more of a kind of testing the waters to see if there was an opportunity there. But the phone, the new device, wasn't a new device, actually. iPhone originally started out as an iPod that made phone calls. Hmm. And so if you look, if you Google, go to patents.google and look for my name, you'll see one of the earliest patents. I don't know if it was granted, but we filed it. But it has an illustrative drawing on our first attempt at a phone. And it was an iPod. With a click wheel and everything, and you would put it into phone mode, and the wheel had a double shot, you know, plastic, so it went from blue backlit controls, which were play, pause, you know, next, previous, and then it would, when you put it into phone mode, it would switch over to these orange controls, and it was all around in a circle, 0 through 9, A, B, C, D, E, F, like those old rotary phones, and that's how you clicked and dialed, and so that was the very first iPhone. It was as unappealing to use as it sounds.
Hmm.
But in parallel, while we were building that first phone, and we built it, there were about 200 or 300 instances of it. We built it several. We did a factory.
That's a collector's item, right? If somebody's got one of those.
I certainly don't. I had to give all my stuff back when I left Apple. Hmm. While we were doing that, Apple had acquired this company called Fingerworks, and they were the idea. It was actually acquired into the Human Interface Group, the people that make keyboards and mice and things like that. The Fingerworks guys had a touch surface that you could, multiple fingers could be on it. But the idea was to make a keyboard, you know, based on that technology. Somebody, I forget who, had the idea that they could marry that technology, that surface, because it was clear. It didn't have to be opaque or anything. They could marry that to a screen, and then you could have a direct input mechanism. And I think, I don't know if the idea was to make like a screen keyboard kind of a thing, but then somebody yet again came up with that idea of, let's make a completely new device. This phone is really cool. Steve had bought into it, but it was a pain in the ass to use. And so that's when Scott Forstall and his crew got involved. Now this is where the, you know, the, what is it? Politicalization, whatever it is. Yeah, it's when Apple started to become really political. So Scott had come in with his team, and Scott, again, my old boss, and they drafted up some pictures on what they could make if they were to build the phone. And it was
going to be what year were you? What, 2004, five?
2004 is when I think the prototypes happened. It would be interesting to see the application date on that patent. I don't know, but it was around then, 2004, 2005. And the decision was made, and so then we started having these regular meetings with Steve on the phone project. And the decision was made to cut the iPod phone and switch over to this unibody, the one that we know of as iPhone today. Then the fight became, okay, so we've agreed on the hardware. What's the software stack we're going to use? And initially, the stack was macOS. Let's try to, well, Darwin, right? That's the kernel that macOS is built on. We were pushing, we, as Tony Fidel's org, were pushing for Linux as the kernel, right? Mm-hmm. We thought we could build a phone based on WebKit, which is what I built Dashboard on. We could use WebKit with Linux and make an operating system for the product. And that was much more, because Linux was a known quantity, right? We knew we could put Linux in embedded stuff.
Open source, and you could do all open kinds source, of stuff.
Yeah. And the argument was, we, Apple, can't possibly ship a device with Linux. That's stupid. And our argument countering that was, nobody knows what operating system is in airport base station, or what's the operating system in an iPod. Nobody knows or cares about that. How is this going to be any different? And so ultimately, what Forstall's org won, and we started marching towards that. It was really, when you think about it, when you really think about iPhone, it's a product that shouldn't really have existed. And I mean that more from an engineering perspective. It shouldn't have existed. When you build a new thing, right? Let's say you build like this, I'm on a laptop. When you build a new laptop, the way engineering works is, you take your old design, you add in a new screen, new processor, you twiddle a couple of things, maybe put in a new package, and then ship it. The phone, we had not a single known quantity in the entire stack. We started with a piece of custom silicon, the chip. The brains behind the entire operation was something we had to invent. Well, we worked with another company to do it, because we had some onerous restrictions from the operating system that most chips didn't have. And so we needed to have a chip custom made. While we were making the chip, hey, let's throw some other things that would be nice, like a nice fast GPU and all sorts of other stuff. So it started with a chip. Then it went up to the hardware design. We'd never built a phone before, right? None of us knew anything about making phones. And so, and we were hamstrung by the fact that Steve didn't want anybody who had made phones before working on iPhone. And so so we couldn't hire the people that we thought we needed. And then on top of that was an operating system. You know, we put Darwin. Darwin had never been run. Well, first, so the instruction set of the chip was called ARM. Darwin had never been run on ARM before. It always is Intel, right? So now we're going to put it on a completely new instruction set, which requires a whole new tool chain and all sorts of other stuff. It had also never been run on a device that had less than, like, whatever, 128 megs of RAM or whatever it was at the time.
And next to no battery life.
Next to no battery life. And so, but up the stack, every single thing was new, and it had to be. So, and then finally, it culminates with the fact that now you're interfacing with this thing with fingers instead of mice. And how the hell are we supposed to make this work? So when your mail app crashes, whose fault is it? Is it the toolchain making the wrong thing? Is it a bug in the mail app? Did you just run out of memory and some other part of the phone was you know, shooting the bed? Was it
sounds complicated. I mean, there was a lot of moving parts here. When did you know that you were onto something? When did you what point of the evolution of the iPhone? Or what did it? Did you not know until they went on sale and people bought them?
No, you know, for me, I was lucky, since I was so early on and I was part of that little inner circle. I got to carry the phone with the actual UI out and about. That was a really heavily restricted device. People were not allowed to even see the final UI before we announced it, let alone carry a piece of hardware out. So for me, I was driving around. Remember, these were the days when MapQuest was a thing. Remember MapQuest? You'd like to like go print out your directions to wherever it is you were going.
Right.
And I was at a stop sign. I didn't print out my directions. I didn't have a GPS or any of the things. But I got my phone. I was like, oh, shit, I got my phone. So I got and I MapQuested on the thing. And I got my directions. I was like, oh, wow, this is cool. And that's, for me personally, that's when I figured we actually had something really neat. Because I had the full.
What was it like getting the first phone call? The first time your phone rang?
I actually did receive the very first phone call ever made on an iPhone.
Oh, you were it. You were number one.
Recipient. So my teams were responsible for that. So we'd all done all this stuff in simulators and software, and we had boards. And the very first iPhone, by the way, stretched. You know those folding card tables? Like whatever, the brown ones that have the plasticky tops. Yeah. The very first iPhone spanned three of those because it was, again, custom chip, big boards and three of those card tables. When we finally got the first prototypes in from Asia, like they were hand carried from the factory in Asia. And my guys got the software up and running on this prototype, the communication stack. And so they called me to show me that they had actually done it. And I was in my office talking to somebody, but whatever. And I get this phone call. And I was like, I look over on my phone, didn't recognize the number. So I sent it to voicemail, continue my conversation. At the end of the meeting, I checked my voicemail. And it was my guys. They're like, dude, what are you doing? This is the first call made on the iPhone. And like, oh, they didn't say iPhone. They said the phone, right? And I was like, holy crap. So what should have been like this momentous, like, you know, Alexander Graham Bell moment, you know, where they had the first, I just sent it to voicemail. So,
so the first voicemail too. That's awesome. Getting some really good questions here. Saba is asking, could you share more about the Apple culture and the demands of creating the number one global brand?
Sure. I think that's an answer that's evolved, right? So when I first joined, Apple was a very different, you know, Apple in 1995, unrecognizable. Apple in 2001, when Steve came back, started off kind of more chummy and people generally agreed. I kind of referred to it a little later. When iPhone started, Apple became a very political place. And by that, I mean, not politics as we know them, but as corporate politics, right? People vying for Steve's attention. People sabotaging in some places. You know, trying to get a hold of a project. They want ownership of a project because that was more love from Steve. So Apple became a very political place. What that also meant was while people are garnering for or trying to vie for Steve's attention, they worked constantly, and Apple. Has an evolved culture now. Well, I shouldn't say now is a different answer, but Steve knew how to get the most work value extracted out of everybody that worked for him. And so the demands, I think, were many. One was people worked constantly, weekends, evenings, night, day, all the time there was somebody working on this project. Which is funny because these were, you know, if you imagine you put in an 80, 90 hour work week, nobody bitched about it. What's interesting about that is people were so in love with these products that they were creating that they worked constantly and they did it with a smile on their face, except when they didn't, right? There were times when obviously tensions boiled over. And, you know, we had an instance where late one night, it was before Christmas, it was like December 18th, 19th, whatever. We're just in the hallway, right? And imagine, you have a lot of super smart people with a super tight deadline. This is the Christmas right before we are about to announce the phone. And we're in the hallway, and somebody made some quip. These two people standing right next to me made a quip. And it escalated instantly to this argument about who is spending less time with their kids. Like, and it blew up like that. A screaming match and all this. And this other person stormed off to their office, slammed the door so hard that it broke the lock. And this is late at night, so we had to call the Apple locksmith, and they were like, I can't be there for an hour. So Forrestal got a bat. We're all taking turns with a bat, like banging on this on this door handle to get this person out. It became funny, but that's just, I mean, you look at the culture, it blew up.
Well, there's been films, there's been both movies with actors, dramatizations, and then there's a documentary, which I think you're in, aren't you?
There's a documentary called Steve Jobs, Man in the Machine. So I'm in that one.
Is that on Netflix?
It's on Netflix now. I think it also runs every now and then. CNN, I think, runs it as well. Or Nat Geo. I forget. Somebody runs it. And I'm also on a TV show.
What's it called again? I want to bookmark it for later viewing.
Steve Jobs, The Man in the Machine. Man in the Machine.
Nothing. Okay. I'm gonna find that on Netflix. Put on my.
I think it's a faith. It's a faithful portrayal, I think, of Steve, because it's, you know, a lot of people that worked closely with him. I think my problem with the movie, you know, that came out in theaters, I forget who was in it.
The Ashton Kutcher one.
There was two, right? They both two summers ago. This one came out. And it still shows on like airplanes and stuff. That one I have an issue with because it's very much, it's the story, I think, like the book Steve wanted told instead of, I think, the way it was interpreted by other people.
So you feel like the book was an embellishment, the huge, what's his name?
The Walter Isaacson book. I wouldn't say it's propaganda, but I think it's definitely a one-sided story. To call it an autobiography, a biography isn't right. I think it's more of the story Steve wanted to tell. But
so when we see him in the films exploding on somebody and demeaning them, did that happen?
All the time. Yep.
All the time.
All the time. Well, he did it to me. At one point, I mean, in addition to fuck chop, I'm fat fuck, dumb fuck. At one point, I was single-handedly ruining his company.
I can see that worked out.
but those were fairly explosive encounters. And, but you know what? As explosive as they were, I think the reason why we all kept coming back to it was the time he gave you the occasional compliment, which wasn't often, but when he did, you were on cloud nine. Mm-hmm. Right. So, and I don't know.
How many iPhones sold that first month? Do you know?
I have no idea. I remember. You did?
I'm one of the guys that paid $599 for it. and I didn't have a problem with it. When they dropped the price 200, people were like, no fair, we paid more. And Apple just proactively gave $100 rebate back to everybody. I wasn't asking for one. I knew what I was buying. I knew what I was paying. I'm not going to be a whiny brat about it.
Yep. Well, you know, what's funny with that on the announcement. Did you watch the announcement live?
I probably did. It's been so long.
So one of the other stories, I was in the audience. So I'd been through the rehearsals and all the other stuff. And leading up while we were doing rehearsals, where the few of us are hanging out, like, you know what we should do? Let's get a bottle of scotch. And after each part of the demo, because, you know, he was introducing a new thing. Like it was an internet communicator, a phone and an iPod, all the things. And after each part of the demo, we decided that whoever was responsible for that chunk would take a shot in the audience, right? So we had this bottle. And I realized, it sounded like a great idea until I realized, well, I was responsible for a lot of it, like my teams were, right? And so I had to do shots all the way along. So by the time he finishes that keynote, I'm like 8 shots in and I'm hammered.
And I've seen that before. I know what that looks like.
But, you know, it was by the way, that intro was the best run through I think any of us had ever seen, because there was always something going wrong. If you deviated from the script in that introductory script, if you deviated a little bit, the phone was very crash prone. Right? It wasn't really done. We were showing something that wasn't baked yet. And the reason why we did that was because we were going to we had to certify the phone to go on AT&T's network. And we calculated out, we needed about 6 months to get through certification. But most of the phones get leaked in the cert process. And so we didn't want to have, we didn't want to have our phone get leaked by certification. So that's why we announced it when it did. But it wasn't done. Hmm.
That, and that's the tech way. Well, you know, you're a part of history, and you left Apple, you went to work for Palm, worked on WebOS over there for a while, and you've had startups, and you've now you're working with an agency.
And yep, I've joined a company called Siberia, and we're a global design and engineering firm. We help some of the world's largest brands solve really hard problems.
Do you ever get lost there?
Siberia, because in the middle of nowhere.
Siberia. You know, when you think about, you see now, I don't know how many hundreds of millions of OS devices are out there now, you know, iPhones, iPads. When you, like, do you get the sense of, dang, I was part of a movement, a revolution in technology?
You know, that feeling has worn off. It was more... I remember when we first started selling them, it was weird to see them in people's hands because of the extreme secrecy on the project. That was it. Not because, you know, your thing is being used by all these people. It's because, oh my God, what are you doing with that? That should be hidden, you know, because it's so, but no, I mean, you know, one of the things I wouldn't say complain about, but one of the things I don't like, and it bugs me every time I see it, is, you know, a couple on a date or a family actually is even worse. Everyone's sitting around the table and they all got their iPads and their phones and they're all just sitting there like at a restaurant and they're all tapping away. That drives me bonkers. Mm-hmm. And when I see that, I never set out to make something like that. I don't want that. And I don't know if anybody.
Yeah. You want to bring people together, not to distance them. One last question before we call it good, and I appreciate your time and the great content today. I think you mentioned to me one other time that we were together that Steve never saw the App Store as a thing.
No, in fact, which is funny because you are actually one of the most prolific early apps out there that existed. But when we first did the phone, Steve explicitly didn't want developers on iPhone. This thing's number one job, and he said this over and over again, this thing's number one job was to make and receive phone calls. Nothing else. The second we let some knucklehead developer in there, they can write a piece of software which crashes the phone or does whatever, destabilizes it, and that's right when you need to call 911 or whatever. So that was his like terrifying, like he didn't want that. So very anti-developer. We were going to maybe have people what are called second parties, right? So if Apple is the first party, second parties are people that you bring in kind of by invite only to create a thing. That's about as far as we were going to go. Third parties are what you have today, which is anybody can write a thing. And that was never part of the plan.
And but the App Store is becoming this huge beast. Were you still there when iFart came out?
When what? I'm sorry.
Were you still at Apple when iFart came out in December of 2008?
No, I left. So we shipped the phone in June of 2007. I was at Palm in October. And that's when I was doing that. But yeah,
why did you leave? I'm just curious.
Because I was, it's funny. So Rubenstein, you know, was making the pitch on come to Palm. He was about to become CEO of Palm. And, I remember he's like, call me up. We have this discussion. He's like, hey, do you want to come to Palm? And I was like, hey, no. What's wrong with you? Palm was the company we made fun of when we first started the phone. We all remember those Trio 650s, I think is what it was.
That's what I carried. That was the phone that I was using before moving to the iPhone.
Exactly. We carried that as a thing we didn't want to end up with. And then we did the phone. It's like, well, the way John's like, you know the roadmap. Like whenever we planned anything out, you know, in some conference room inside of Apple, there's a roadmap that stretches out around 18 months and it's the entire product lineup for a thing. And he's like, you know, the roadmap, do you want to continue to turn the crank and churn out things? Or do you want to invent something new? Because I'm offering you the chance to do something new. And WebOS was the new thing, which was dashboard, the thing I did early. It's dashboard as an operating system.
Right. And well, that's a lot of cool stuff. You do good stuff.
Go on.
And I appreciate you sharing with us today here.
I had a full head of hair at one point.
We believe you. So did I. Oh, wait.
Oh, gosh.
It has receded. It has, but oh, I think I'm fortunate. I've made it to here and up there. Hey, Andy, if anybody wants to contact you post-interview, where's your favorite place for engagement?
Facebook is good. My Facebook page is open to the public. Anybody can see it. I post there every now and then, usually funny and stupid stuff. Or Twitter. I'm on, I'm Preme, P-R-E underscore M-E on Twitter. That's the best. I mean, email, I would say, but, you know,
I don't do actual email. We got all kinds of weirdos watching. You know, you already have me stalking you. One weirdo's enough. You don't need the rest.
Hey, thanks for listening to the show today. If you've liked what you've heard, then why not take a few moments to submit a review for me on iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play? I know I'd appreciate that. And if you want to get in touch with me, go to joelcom.com/contact. That's my contact form. It goes directly to me. Love to hear from you. Of course, you can find me on social media, whether Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Snapchat, at joelcom. Thanks for listening and do good stuff.